Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now it's Anton Savage time. That means Anton is here to tell you all about things that you probably read a little bit about, or maybe just saw some headlines and didn't bother reading the article. Well, he read them for you. So go for it. What's happening, Anton?
Well, first off, my personal favourite this week is the husband who faked his own death to prove that his wife hired a hitman to kill him. This is a gentleman by the name of Ramon Sosa, who back in 2015, he was in the process of divorcing his wife, Maria Lulu Sosa. And the divorce got so contentious that she offered $1,500 to a hitman to kill the husband. Now, this is during the divorce. They're already going their separate ways. And she decides, no, I'm going to double down and have him killed. The hitman that she chose, obviously Houston is a smaller city than we might have thought. The hitman that she chose turned out to be a friend of the soon-to-be ex-husband who came to him and went, you won't believe what the wife is after saying to me. Now, at this point, I would have thought you'd just say, leave the house, get the divorce, get done. No. He continues to cohabit with her to lure her into trying to go through with this while at the same time as he talks to the cops. The Texas Rangers then say, well, okay, we'll dig a shallow grave for you and do stage makeup to make it look like you've been shot. So there's pictures online of him apparently naked because the shot is from the waist up, arms strapped behind his back with a bullet hole in the side of his head.
So to make it look to her that the hitman carried out his gig and she can pay the hitman.
Correct. Right. The hitman shows this to her. She goes, woohoo, you kill the husband, and they arrest her. $1,500 seems cheap to me.
$1,500 is very cheap for starters. But the second thing is, like, that guy was living in the house with her knowing that she had gone all the way to get a hitman. So, like, did he sleep at night? What if
exactly.
He changed his mind and said, I'll just do him in now?
That's my concern. Like, there was another story of a. Do you remember John Wayne Bobbitt? The man who
everybody knows about him already. Uh-huh. Yeah.
There was another one of those during the week where a woman decided, how do you know she won't decide, well, murder may be too much, I'll just maim you a bit? Or even, how do you know that she's not quietly poisoning you to double down in case the hitman doesn't?
Yeah.
But he would cuddle up in bed every night. Although I suppose if they're being divorced, they're probably not.
Exactly. Anyway, that's all fake death stories.
This brings us neatly to fraud.
Fraud, okay.
Japanese clerk.
Yeah.
Stole, allegedly, over 1,300 credit cards by instantly memorizing them. If ever there is a clever and simple way to do it, apparently he would be handed the credit card. He would just look at the security on the back, look at the front of it, memorize names, expiration dates, card numbers. And then as soon as the person went out of the shop, he would then have their cloned card. And he did it for 1,500 credit cards working in a mall in Koto City in Japan.
Wow.
Yeah. And of course, all the reports are saying photographic memory, and that leads to, is there such a thing as a photographic memory, and whether he was doing it with mnemonics or anything else. There's a lot of skepticism around it. There was one famous example of it where a woman in medical tests was given two separate dot patterns, so a picture of a dot pattern and another picture of a dot pattern.
Yeah.
And in her head, she overlapped them and it revealed a picture. So she was able to so correctly remember the two separate patterns that she could combine them in her brain to read them.
Hold on a thing. I interviewed somebody who was going to go for the annual World Memory Championships.
Can you remember the name?
But there was, like, there is such a thing.
Well, there is.
And they're big tests.
One of the things that the memory championship, the memory contenders do,
yeah.
One of the most common ones is a thing rooted in how they used to structure, I think it was Greek archery. But what you do is you imagine a journey through somewhere that you know.
I think it was Greek archery. But you listen to him as just a little aside.
I'm never sure what things I'm making up and what I've read somewhere. But if you structure a journey, so let's say you imagine yourself in your bedroom. And you say, okay, I get up and the first thing will be a phone and I leave that on my bedside table. The next thing is a canoe and I have to step over that to get out of the door. And you place all of the items you're trying to remember as you walk around your house. Then all you have to do is do the walk again. And you get up and you look at the bedside table, there's the phone.
That makes sense.
And you can remember hundreds of things because it becomes one linear story.
Right.
Don't know how that works for credit cards.
Well, like, I mean, it's a such a thing, to go back to the question that we asked, as kind of a memory thing that...
There's a lot of skepticism.
Klaus Kinski, the actor, and Leonardo da Vinci, they were big into that. Yeah, they claimed that they can do all that kind of thing. President Roosevelt was special for that, wasn't he? He was. He actually was.
Roosevelt was special for what?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Do you know? Do you remember Rain Man?
I got a Roosevelt thing for you.
Rain Man.
How many matches? I got to see Wapner.
No, I'll tell you. Rain Man. Do you remember like Rain
Man? I do.
And the guy who was based on Kim Peek. He's he's one of those. He's like, he really has it.
That's true. And there are people with similar issues, savants who can remember, who can draw from memory entire cityscapes with total accuracy. But among those whose brains function like the vast majority of human brains, the whole photographic memory thing is quite unusual. Roosevelt is, which one is, am I mixing him up?
Franklin
with
Delano or whatever.
Him and the same.
Yeah.
There's a cool thing if ever you're in New York that's worth doing. Doesn't cost you any money, but it's a good old thing. Roosevelt, because of the polio, wouldn't allow himself to be pictured in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
So when he would go to New York, where he would stay was in the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. He would get, the train had a platform under the hotel. He would be in the car. It would come up in an elevator, drive out the door and in another elevator, so nobody ever saw him having to walk. The last time he came, he left by car. His railway carriage is still under the Waldorf. And if you walk down the side of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel and look through one of the grates in the path, you can actually see Roosevelt's armoured locomotive still sitting under the Waldorf.
That's an amazing thing.
You want to talk about messages in a bottle?
Yeah, messages in a bottle.
What's a family has been rescued. A family stranded on a 40-foot waterfall in California. But the man's name was Curtis Whitson. He was with his family on a scenic Father's Day weekend. They got stuck at the top of the 40-foot waterfall. And he had the wit to say, "Know what I'll do?" So he wrote a message in a bottle, flung it off the waterfall. And it was found within 15 hours of him releasing it. And they were all rescued.
Okay, I presume either no service or no mobile phone or cell phone or any of that kind of stuff. Nothing like that. Now, what do you mean stuck on top of a waterfall? I mean, I'm not asking
unable
you to, go, okay,
to traverse it.
No, but I mean, I'm not asking you to go down that way because you'll fall over the waterfall. How about going back to where, like, I don't know.
It's a funny thing. I watch a lot of these, you know, sort of Naked and Afraid, how did I end up in these crisis situations things. A lot of people seem to go down things they can't get back up. And if you've gone down a thing you can't get back up, and then you discover, well, we're stuck at this waterfall.
He had a bottle, and he had a biro, a piece of paper, and he flings it into a waterfall.
Correct.
And, like, as opposed to 900 years later, somebody finds it within what?
Within, I think, 15 hours.
And they go, oh, look, there's a bottle from somebody who's in trouble. Let's open it and find a message.
It happened.
Somebody is obviously writing a movie. This guy must be working for Hollywood.
You would be amazed at how common it is that bottles get found. There is an estimate that more than a million messages in bottles have been transferred around the world over the years. And they tend to get found very rapidly. One of the cutest ones, if you are so inclined, was a soldier going off to war in 1914, dropped a message in a bottle to his wife as he crossed the English Channel. He was killed in action in the front 2 days later. The bottle was found in 1999, and the message was given to his 86-year-old daughter to say, that was your dad's last message to your mum 2 days before he died.
Wow. Yeah. And that can be proved that, like, it wasn't.
Yes,
written,
Dave.
It wasn't written
some
4 days ago.
Some things are just nice and true.
I know. Yeah.
Well, if you want, if,
you know, there's a couple from Cork, from Glanmire. Do you know that thing on the Titanic on the program?
No.
And they threw a bottle in the sea or something, and it was found.
Was it?
In fact, I think it actually washed up quite near Cork.
We do particularly well on the washing up of stuff because of our position in the North Atlantic. Did you know about the ducks?
I don't.
There was a shipping.
Do I know about the ducks? There's a question I haven't been asked in a long time.
A shipping container went overboard from a freight vessel in.
Oh, yes, I know about this.
The friendly floaties.
About 20,000 yellow ducks.
Correct.
Have invaded Norwich or something.
Invaded Norwich. These are I knew you'd know about the ducks. 28,000 rubber ducks got released, and they turned out to be a huge boon to science because everybody knew, well, the container went overboard there. Therefore, they could track how far the ducks went and how fast. So, for instance, the spinning of the North Atlantic current. Nobody knew how long it takes to do a full circle. Well, they watched the ducks. The ducks came past Cork and then went back over. And that led
to. So I'd say it was a prank. I'd say one of the guys was on midnight looking at the thing. Do you know what's in that thing there? There's 28,000 ducks. Come on. Where are ducks supposed to be? Let's shag them overboard and see what happens.
Well, if because they're still out there. If you find a little yellow rubber duck on the beach, Have Google Friendly Floaty, because that's what apparently the brand name of the duck. There are still scientists who want to know where the ducks are being found. And apparently they're still in relatively good condition. They come up as quite neat little rubber ducks.
Ah, yeah, they just float along, you know, like minding their own business.
While we're staying on things being washed up, a drug gang has been thwarted by a giant seal in Australia.
Oh, I saw some of this. It was like they had billions of...
They had $1 billion worth of cocaine.
What a bunch of idiots. Seriously. You think you'd get your kind of navigation together?
This happens a lot. People who shouldn't be on boats.
Oh, yeah. Do you
sail
one,
away with... Yeah.
Do you remember the one off Ireland, off
Cork? Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, surely if you've got €1 billion in play or $1 billion in play, you can bribe somebody with a yacht master license. It can't be that difficult.
The Young Offenders, the movie. Wasn't that the first... wasn't that the thing on that?
Very similar thing.
They found one, yeah.
Well, what happened to these boys anyway was they were off the coast. They were near Burton Island in Western Australia. They had one vessel and they were meant to be meeting another vessel. They got stuck on a reef. So they decided to take all of the cocaine and methamphetamines and ecstasy off the boat. They brought it onto the beach and attempted to hide it under seaweed. A fisherman spotted them, and the police later explained that if you're trying to hide from spotter planes and fishermen, don't wear day glow pink t-shirts. Mm. So they found them on the island. The police landed. The boys legged it to try to get back to their dinghy so they could escape by sea. And in running away, they scared a seal, which sat up and went, arr, or whatever seals do.
And what does the seal do?
It goes, arr. They were so frightened by this seal that they froze and the police arrested them. €1 billion to people who are scared of seals.
Hold on a second. So were they going to get back onto their boat and scarper?
I'm not sure they had a well worked out plan from once they got on the boat.
Was the boat going to work?
The dinghy would work.
Oh, the dinghy
But keep
work.
In mind, Captain Bligh made it all the way from there to Britain in an old dinghy. So if he can do it, they might have been able to do it too.
And, like, they saw a seal and went, oh!
Yeah,
because they're waiting to be arrested, like in a cartoon.
We can do this as a one-act play. You can do their shock, I'll do the seal. Beautiful, we should take it on the road.
Jeez.
News from Kenya. A Kenyan MP has demanded that there be a law to combat farting on planes.
Right, okay.
And that also that anti-flatulence drugs should be made available for passengers. I didn't know there was such a thing as an anti-flatulence drug.
An anti-flatulent drug.
Apparently there is. The MP in question, Lillian Achieng Gogo, made the comments while Parliament was talking about possible amendments to a law on offences committed on aircraft. So obviously they started with kidnapping and hijacking and worked their way down to farting. And she said, and I quote, "There is one irritant that is often ignored, and this is the level of farting within the aircraft. If this is not managed well," managed well as opposed to stopped, "if this is not managed well, it can cause discomfort and insecurity on board."
To other passengers.
Well, depending on the nature at hand, possibly yourself as well. But what do they say about children and flatulence?
I don't know.
You only like your own. Anyway, this is actually a bigger problem than you might think. Because you do fart more on a plane.
Do you?
Yeah.
Does one?
One? Yeah, I don't mean you personally. Everybody, if you are so inclined, you're more inclined up in the air. Because planes, the altitude inside a plane is about 8,000 feet. The pressure is about 8,000.
That's why I didn't even ask for an explanation. I was going to get it anyway. Continue, Professor.
Because it is lower than the sea level pressure, any gas that is in you expands. And I was going to say there's only one place to go. It is two places to go. But if it's got that far, it's going to commit to the first one. So you are more likely to be windy on a plane than almost anywhere else.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Do you want more?
Yeah.
Thanks. The other thing is, you're also more likely to get diseased on a plane than almost anywhere else.
Diseased.
Diseased.
Define diseased.
Infested with bacteria and viruses, which you otherwise wouldn't want.
Wow.
There is a very interesting case in 1977, an Alaska Airlines plane,
of course
it is. Which was caught on, it was held on either a runway or a taxiway for 4 hours. This is important. I'll explain why in a minute. Of the 56 passengers on board, 75% of them got the flu from one passenger. There are almost no environments on Earth where humans have less air less dedicated airspace to them than on a commercial flight. And the problem isn't when it's in the air, because when it's in the air, you're pumping fresh air through the thing and it's not so bad.
Right.
The problem is when you get to the gate and they shut everything off. You are now in an aluminium tube surrounded by diseased people. And if they cough or sneeze or anything in that window before you can get back out of the airport or it takes off, that's your disease central.
Wow, now this is stuff we need to know.
No, you're under less threat from the farting because you don't have the lower pressure that you would get at altitude.
All right, I see. I was wondering if we're going to get back to that. Okay, very good.
No problem.
Next.
An underpopulated Italian region will offer you 25 grand to move in.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. It looks lovely.
Yeah, this is one of those where you think, Italians. And then you read into it and go, actually, that's very sensible. What they're offering is €700 per month over a 3-year period.
Which you have to open a business, don't you?
Correct.
Yeah.
Which isn't so bad. I mean, that's how Yanks give out visas. The same thing. Come over to an underpopulated area and open
business.
A
can be like
business.
Coffee shops or clothes shops or
pretty much anything.
Do a local newspaper, anything.
Yeah, and you know, radio. You could do it from anywhere.
Yeah.
Home studio. Yeah. 25k a year, back pocket, living in nice Mezzogiorno style.
Where is
wines.
It exactly? Up north,
Italy.
South, east, or west?
Italy.
Just Italy. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
It's definitely in Italy.
Okay.
We will bring everything to a conclusion, I would suggest, with a frog marriage, because I know you enjoy a good wedding.
A frog marriage?
A frog marriage. Frogs who, well, actually, it's kind of a sad story.
Do you know that frogs don't drink water? They absorb it through their skin. I bet you didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Is that true?
It's an amazing thing about frogs, yeah. And they have, you know, they have the eyes up here, like, so that means they can be underwater doing all this kind of thing. Seriously. Okay, I'll stop.
Anyway, these frogs were married as a grand gesture to try to appease gods in India, which are responsible for bringing rains. So,
like, did they decide to get married?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Were they married? With the, like,
they did.
Was it a kind of an arranged marriage?
They
by their
invited
parents?
All of their frog friends, and then they lay in a nice bowl of champagne to absorb it through their skin.
Right, okay.
Anyway, they were so successful in bringing rain that there's now serious flooding problems and there's too much, so they've annulled it.
Wait a minute, they were supposed to not bring rain?
They were supposed to bring rain.
Oh.
They were so effective.
And they brought so many rains. Sorry, so much rain.
Yes.
So they brought so much rain.
They brought so many rains.
People are flooded out of it. And
correct.
They've got divorced.
And the whole thing has been annulled.
Right, so the divorced frogs. On that note, Anton Savage.
Why do I do this?
It has once again been... No, it hasn't been real. Goodbye. Dave Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.